If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
I found that, you know, I work best at the beat of my own drum. And, you know, I'm one of those individuals that loves to study financial freedom and equations to basically come up with financial freedom and things of that nature. That's who I am.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Sean Morrissey is a buy and hold investor and real estate broker and owner who lives in Aurora, Illinois with his wife, two children, dog, and a cat. He started his real estate journey in 2003, opened his own brokerage in 2011, and has managed up to 200 single-family homes while building his real estate rental portfolio in the western suburbs of the Chicagoland area. I'm excited to jump in today as we hear from Sean and how he scaled from single-family properties into small multifamily. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Man, it's a pleasure to have you. I understand you're based out of Chicago, and you know, you guys are up there doing big things. I would love to hear your story, kind of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there.
Yeah, you betcha. So yeah, as you stated, I'm located in the western suburbs of the Chicagoland area, specifically out of Aurora, Illinois, which is the second biggest city in Illinois. But yeah, my story starts, you know, all the way back in summer of 2001, technically, when my dad took me out to dinner. Ultimately, kind of dropped the idea of, you know, investment real estate on me, or in essence, gave me a book that was about using investment real estate as a tax shelter. And that book, man, I don't even remember the title, but it was, you know, straight out of the mid 70s. But it was good. You know, ultimately, it gave me the introduction to, like, oh, this, you know, assist this. I mean, I was straight out of college, and it was a great learning tool. So from there, I got involved in some different real estate investment clubs in our local area, which at that time, you know, there was no Zoom, there was no online meetups. It was all face-to-face. But yeah, ultimately kind of got acclimated really over like an 18-month period where I would underwrite deals, talk to different landlords, start to figure out, you know, what is the system I want to go with, and then bought my first property in what was June of 2003, just a 750-square-foot, two-bedroom, one-bath condo, rented that out. You know, that was just as the market was starting to really accelerate on the sales side. So before you knew it, by 2005, going into 2006, you know, really you had to start renting to anybody that had a heartbeat, because anybody that had a heartbeat was already buying or had the ability to buy, because lending restrictions were so loose back then. So through that, you know, I had my first eviction in really late 2005, early 2006, and then another one with that following tenant. So at that point, I was like, what am I doing? Like, this landlord stuff is a joke. You know, bought a few properties over that time frame. 2008 came along, you know, kicked my butt, and that ultimately wasn't able to buy anymore. You know, banks basically said, whoosh, there goes your home equity line of credit. You can't use that anymore, and you're on your own. So, you know, cash flow was fairly tight during those years, from 08 to really, you know, 2011. But I decided to get my real estate license at that point. Hung it with a Keller Williams here in the Chicagoland area. And really what I did is I kind of changed with where the market changed and said, all right, well, instead of chasing down these investment properties and trying to just help buyers and sellers, I'm going to help folks that are underwater, and I'm going to assist in renting their property. And that ultimately evolved to like a third-party property management service in 2010. So October 2011, you know, butt heads with Keller Williams, unfortunately enough, in regards to my model, to where I said, all right, it really makes sense for me to open up my own brokerage. So did that in October 2011, and really there was no looking back. I mean, we got up to about 200 properties managed third party. I got back into the investment, you know, buying game for myself starting in 2013, when I was able to find a portfolio lender. You know, kind of did that alongside, you know, third-party property management, and slowly investing portfolio, building that from 2013 to 2018. And then early 2018, I decided to sell the third-party property management portfolio to a larger brokerage out of Michigan, and took those proceeds and bought some small multifamily buildings. And then, yeah, basically it's been a value add play since then. So, you know, June of this year, I refinanced a 16-unit building I own. Decided to take those proceeds. I've got them kind of sitting on the sidelines right now, but I've got them lined up. Do a heavy value add on a 12-unit building in Joliet, Illinois right now. And then I'm just kind of working with the other assets I have in play where I've kind of got a calendar lined up, right? Where I know every year for the next 10 years what I'm going to refi and what and when based on the prepayment schedule, when that shakes off and when really the opportunity is needed for me to pull proceeds out of those funds and do it all over again. So that's, you know, in a kind of a 5-minute nut, who I am and what I've done and where I'm at.
Right. No, that's fantastic. So it sounds like your niche focus as you've scaled has really gone to the smaller multifamily.
Correct. Yeah. And you know, when I've kicked around the idea of self-storage this past year, and I came close to putting a few self-storage deals under contract, and it's still in the cards, frankly, but self-storage to me is very easy to reproduce. So my only fear with that particular niche is, you know, you're able to take all those old big box shops and reconvert them to self-storage space. And I've kind of stayed out of that arena because it's a little easy to get into from a production standpoint, I suppose. So yeah, so small multifamily, a little self-storage. I've looked at other asset classes, but frankly, nothing's as attractive to me as multifamily. And part of the reason for that is I'm able to take the property management systems I've produced and just plug and play. And I can't necessarily do that as easily with, you know, other asset classes. It's a little bit different.
Right. Yeah. You'd have to kind of retool what you know to fit a new asset class.
Correct. Yeah.
Interesting. So small multifamily, the opportunity, it sounds like where you are is a good one. And you'd mentioned along the way that you were able to take the systems. And I think this is kind of the key. I keep hearing this today, is the systems that you learned in the property management side and now apply them on to, you know, to what you guys own in-house. Can you talk about what systems you guys kind of use?
Yeah, I can do that. In fact, what's kind of fun is I'm actually putting together like an audiobook right now to talk about, you know, making more efficient property management systems for the landlord. Because what we've really experienced from 2010 to today, for me personally, and you see it in other industries, ultimately is tech compressing those industries, right? To make things more efficient, cheaper, better than they were just 10 years ago. And property management is no exception to that. So, you know, really the four legs to any efficient property management system is you need to have a leasing process. You need to have the ability to collect rents and, you know, act on that if tenants don't pay. You need to have a good repair process and you need to have a good inspection process. So, you know, those are the four legs. And then, you know, I can go into more detail if you want in each of those, but really using tech combined with what your asset class is to make that work the most efficient way possible is really what I strive to do on an individual level. And then for my clients basis and, you know, ultimately what I'm hoping to do for other third-party landlords and property managers out there.
Right. So you sold your property management company, but you are still managing or you're not? I mean, obviously you're managing your own, but you're still managing other people's properties or not?
No, I'm not managing other people's properties so much. I just tend to focus on my own portfolio. Part of the reason for that is I signed a non-compete for a few years, but I am potentially going to get back into it next year. Unfortunately, a few things fell through that were supposed to happen post-sale. And it kind of kept me here in the Chicagoland area naturally. So I'm looking at that as an option into 2021. So we'll see.
Gotcha. So as you guys look to go forward, as you look back on the last few years, I know you talked to tech being one of the things that kind of helped along the way, but what are some things you either had great success with and or some failures that that occurred along the way that you said, hey man, these are some things I really learned hard lessons from?
Yeah. I mean, when I think about great success, I think about, you know, where I was, where my mind was at back in 2007, 2008, where ultimately, you know, the sale market tanked, right? And realtors were basically left with a shovel in their hand trying to figure out where they're going to dig out their next deal. And I was fortunate enough to say, well, listen, you know, I've already been a landlord that's been burned a few times. I was involved in some different real estate investment clubs. And oh, by the way, you know, back in those days, realtors wanted nothing to do with rentals. It was kind of it wasn't really a field that anybody got into. So I was lucky to identify a niche that I already was specializing in that I was able to expand upon. So that was huge. So timing, skill set was right, but also identifying market conditions. In terms of weaknesses, on the flip side, during that same time, I mean, I got involved in residential real estate investment at a time when we were already in a bubble, And I had the inability to see that, as many others did as well. And we're at a point in that market to where if you looked at, you know, the history of the appreciation of U.S. real estate, there never was a collapse. It always appreciated year over year over year. So myself and everybody else included basically said, you know, there is no bubble. It'll never burst. You know, there's fixed amount of land. You know, we didn't take into consideration lending practices. So that experience for me was huge, because now we are here in 2020 with a pandemic upon us and the talk of recession, you know, potentially imminent. But I'm able to wrap my head around those experiences from 2007, 2008, and, you know, transpose them into today and say, all right, you know, are we really in a point to where we're going to create a bubble real estate wise, or are things going to collapse? And, you know, the experience is everything, right? As long as you're sensitive to the lessons that are being taught to you.
Right. And how are you guys stress testing your portfolio for either a downturn and or how has it, you can answer just one of two ways. How has it performed through 2020 and kind of what do you see going forward?
Yeah, well, I will say, you know, I've had four small multifamily or self-storage deals under contract this year, and each one of them has fallen apart for different reasons, right? And first and foremost, I would attribute that to the fact that I'm underwriting very stringently, meaning that I want to see a 10% cash on cash return. I'd like to see an internal rate return of 17% or better. And then in our local market, you know, what initially attracts me to a deal is a cap rate. And if I see it at a 7 cap, I'll look at it, but ultimately with the idea that I'm able to add value in 24 months or less. So those are really the big three that I tend to look at. But having said that, strict underwriting, and then ultimately because money is still pretty easy out there in our marketplace, those deals have fallen apart because of the fact that there's just somebody out there that's willing to spend more and take less of a return. So I had a 34 unit under contract this summer, and I was super excited about it because it's actually here in my hometown. Was going to be easy to self-manage because of the distance and because, you know, my systems work well in the Chicagoland market. But yeah, at the end of the day, the seller wasn't able to provide some of the due diligence paperwork. I mean, something as simple as a trailing 12 profit and loss until the earnest money went hard, which to me was totally obnoxious. And she was able to find another buyer that was willing to take the property under contract, have the earnest funds go hard with no trailing 12 profit loss in place, which to me is ludicrous. So, you know, it's stuff like that we're seeing. You know, I'm at a point where I'm at in my career where I'm okay having cash on the sidelines, but, you know, looking for those value add deals as I specified. Now, having said that, I'll just elaborate on the deal we do have under contract right now. It's a 12 unit building in Joliet. Kind of an interesting deal in that six of the units were completely renovated between 2018 and 2019, and the other six are down to the studs. Now, this is a property that's in estate. The seller actually passed in 2019, and you know, that deal I'm working through slowly but surely. But as you can imagine, with the trades in such high demand right now, that's my Achilles heel is ultimately making sure I've got the appropriate tradesmen that are able to come in there, get the job done with a permit under a time frame that I've established, with the idea that by spring of 2021, we could have a fully occupied building that we'll ultimately refi out of or sell going into summer of 2021. So that's my latest fun deal that you know, is a little more heavy on the rehab, but the upside is still pretty good.
Right. Yeah. And it sounds like doing due diligence and really sticking to your guns has been kind of part of your, not just ethos over the years, but part of your success even here in this year.
Yeah, that is precisely it. And now I think we're at a point in the marketplace and potentially over the next 2 years where we're going to separate those that know the industry from those that don't. So you certainly want to make sure you underwrite your deals tightly. And then at the same time, know what your exit strategy is and be confident that you can execute on that, because money's getting pretty cheap. The financing terms we're not giving away money like we were in 2007, 2006, but at the same time, it's pretty cheap. So you just want to be sensitive to how easy it is to access capital and the kind of deal you're getting into.
Right. Yeah. Cause you could easily over leverage you know, with money where it is right now, it's kind of wild times. And so we don't know necessarily where things are going. You could borrow more than you can afford to pay back, which we saw plenty of that, you know, for those that didn't go through the 07, 08 period, you know, that's just not a fun time. So that's awesome. Sean, I'm excited to hear what you guys are doing there in Chicago. Tell us, you know, I know taxation where you guys are tends to be kind of a big hairy deal. How are you guys, you know, dealing with that as it relates to taxes there in the Chicago area? Because I know some people just avoid the market altogether because of that.
You're right. And, you know, the state of Illinois is certainly in a money crunch when it comes to a state government situation. And to your point, that's been reflected in the property taxes. Now, having said all that, keep in mind that, you know, Illinois is in the center of the U.S. It has more railroad track running through it than any other state. You know, in terms of source of water and just natural environment, it's phenomenal. And then you got the Chicagoland area, which is a massive metro area. You know, naturally, Chicago's the third biggest city in the U.S. with a diverse workforce, you know, so on and so forth. So from a market underwriting standpoint, it's a phenomenal market, except for those darn property taxes. Having said that, the rents, as opposed to, you know, the coast, the coastal regions, are fantastic as well. So it's still an affordable market, one where properties cash flow, one where utilities are still relatively affordable, but you've got to be able to see past the property taxes or underwrite your deal with the idea that property taxes are always going to take up a chunk of your cash flow. So again, it all comes down to underwriting your deal in regards to any market you're looking at. So if you're in a heavy growth market, you know, fantastic, but you want to make sure that your cash flows are going to account for the fact that your limited cash flows are going to account for the fact that you're going to experience that high appreciation. In Chicago, we kind of have the balance of both. We're, you know, I tend to feel, depending on what specific area you are in the Chicagoland area, you know, you'll see anywhere from, you know, a 2 to 6% year-over-year growth is what I underwrite for, depending on the region. And then I tend to see right now, you know, roughly a 3% rental increase. But being where we're at in the market right now, when I underwrite a new deal, I try to underwrite anywhere from a 0 to 1% rental growth, because we just don't quite have this COVID thing under control. Although it certainly looks like vaccines are on the horizon. So that's exciting stuff.
Right. Absolutely. Sean, let's jump into the final four. If you were to distill everything you know down to one piece of advice and you were giving this to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
You know, I think it's understanding who you are as an individual, right? So when I think back all the way to 2001, 2003, I actually was in the restaurant industry. And the reason that I got out of the restaurant industry is ultimately it was, frankly, too much work for too little money. But it was even deeper than that. It was basically me learning about myself in such a way to where I found that, you know, I work best at the beat of my own drum. And, you know, I'm one of those individuals that loves to study financial freedom and equations to basically come up with financial freedom and things of that nature. That's who I am. But understanding who you are is really the key component. So if you're in your early 20s or just getting out of college, that's what your role is for the next 10 years of your life. So that when you get into your 30s and you really start building that path towards wealth and who you are as an individual, you're going to do so without this massive monkey on your back. So yeah, I'd start with that.
That's great. What's one thing you're doing right now to stay on top of your game?
Boy, I mean, I host a podcast myself called Landlording for Life. I love doing that because it forces me to meet new people. It forces me to come up with new topics and concepts to talk about. And it's also a way for me to give back. So I'm a massive proponent of doing that for anybody. And you know what, that last question, there's one more thing I wanted to add. There's a book that I read this year that I think is really good in helping you build good character in the process of on your road to wealth. And it's called The Wealthy Gardener. It actually came out towards the beginning of this year, but I'd recommend all your listeners to check that out as well.
That's awesome. Question number three, and you might have just answered it, but when it comes to giving back, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
Yeah, I mean, the podcast, is massive. I'm looking forward to putting this audiobook out on making more efficient property management systems. I mean, I feel like I'm at a point in my career where I could start to, you know, take some of my own education and experience and ultimately pass it on to the next generation. So that's really my goal over the next, you know, 5-10 years maybe and beyond.
That's awesome. Sean, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, you could check out our website, landlordingforlife.com. The podcast is there, and it also provides you access to my real estate brokerage, Chicagoland Realty Group Partners. If you're looking in investing in the Chicagoland market, I'd be happy to talk to you as well in regards to ways we can assist in making that process easier for you.
Fantastic. Sean, thank you so much for your time and insights today. Do appreciate it and look forward to connecting again here soon.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.